You're listening to Alumni Aloud, a new podcast by Graduate Center students for Graduate Center students. In each episode, we talk with a GC graduate about their career and the advice they would give current students. This series is sponsored by the Office of Career Planning and Professional Development at the Graduate Center.
Jeanette Yarwood works as Staff Director for the House of Representatives Foreign Affairs Committee's Subcommittee on Africa, Global Health, Global Human Rights, and International Organizations. When this interview was recorded, though, Jeanette worked at the U.S. Department of State, where she was a chair of the Sub-Saharan Africa Area Studies Program at the Foreign Service Institute, where she worked to train diplomatic staff, research emerging issues in countries across Sub-Saharan Africa, and craft policy recommendations for a diverse range of stakeholders in the U.S. government. In this episode, Jeanette talks about her reasons for pursuing a career in government, the advantages her academic training gives her, as well as the satisfactions that come from applying her skills to create change at the level of international affairs. She's interviewed by myself, Anders Wallace, PhD candidate in anthropology at the Graduate Center. Thanks again for taking the time. Really appreciate it. Tell me your name and what do you do for a living?
Jeanette Yarwood. I'm a cultural anthropologist. And I am the chair of the Africa program at the Foreign Service Institute with the Department of State.
Could you tell me how did you come to do the work that you do?
I can, actually. I feel like I always say to people, I sometimes talk to students, some of the undergrads in the universities around here, and I always tell them that I feel like I kind of happened upon my career. I always thought I'd be a professor. That was my sole purpose in going to get the doctorate. I always thought I'd be a professor. Not just that. I mean, when I was in college, there were very few professors of color. So my goal was to increase the number. And I taught every summer, like most grad students. And then I got a fellowship and I was teaching more than just during the summer. I thought, yeah, I don't think this is for me. Not because I didn't enjoy being in front of the class and engaging students. And I really like watching them get it, you know, like really get it. But I think students were different. They wanted to be sitting in the class texting. They wanted to have their laptops open and doing other things that they shouldn't be doing, not paying attention. And, you know, sort of coercing and convincing people to do work. Okay, that was part of it. But then the real part of it, I'm going to be 100% honest with you, I hated grading papers, exams. And I knew that if I wanted to be a good professor, I had to give them a lot of writing. And I just hated that. And I just didn't want to read things like, what are the four fields of anthropology? You know, it just wasn't interesting to me. So I, at about that time, thought, there might be something else I want to do. So I'm going to say, there was that coupled with I was at a AAA meeting. And I was sitting at the meeting. And first, I was sort of welled up with emotion and excitement because there were all these professors that were probably 12, 15 years my senior, mostly black professors on this panel. And I just thought, wow, in a few years, that's going to be me, you know, that's going to be really cool. And I was sort of really excited. Then when they started speaking, there was so much jargon, so much sort of internal debates internal to the discipline. And I thought, I don't want to do that. That's not what I want to do. I think that the process started there. I don't think consciously, this is sort of reflecting upon it. But I think for me, it was at that moment, I wanted more than just academic debate. Yeah. I thought to have more of an impact. I'm not saying that we don't have an impact by engaging with students, but I wanted a different kind of impact.
Interesting. Yeah.
So that's how I came to sort of think about myself outside of academia. Then I worked for a research institute where essentially I answered questions for the government. And so it would be human rights. It would be absolutely Department of Defense type questions. But I would be in the room and people are, you know, I'd be the one fighting and screaming and basically saying, you know what, you might want to come with your military might. You might want to come with, you know, your policing. But if we don't deal with some of the inequalities and some of the development issues, this problem is just going to crop up again. You might squash it, but it's going to happen again. And I did that for nearly 5 years. I mean, I often worked for the Human Rights Bureau, for the Africa Bureau, for like, again, sometimes Department of Defense. I mean, I think they probably just threw my reports in the trash. But, you know, the thing is, I was the one in the room saying this. And I thought, there was always that part where you wonder, you know, am I doing the right thing? Am I selling out? You know, but I just get tired of being on the sidelines critiquing. For me, I thought, I need to be in here. So I did almost 5 years. I spent a lot of time on the continent, you know, traveling across Africa. Basically, I had my, you know, my own research agenda. I didn't have to take any kind of work that I wasn't interested in doing, you know. That was really good. It was almost like a postdoc. And then, you know, slowly but surely, I guess I got people started to know who I was. And then the opportunity for this job came along. So I feel like those 5 years that job was really engaging with policy, U.S. Africa policy. And then now I have this career where it's sort of at the crossroads, at the intersection of policy and academia. So I'll then tell you what I do here. So as the chair of the Africa program, basically I create the curriculum that anyone who is going to be a diplomat across the African continent. So they'll be heading out to post and or they cover Africa from the United States. Wow. So I create that, you know, the curriculum. So I teach a couple of classes. I teach almost the equivalent of a semester, I would say, in 2 weeks, basically 8:30 to 4:30, like hardcore, like 2 week classes. And I do that 4 times a year. Other than that, I'm like a regular professor. I think, I read, I go to lectures. Sometimes I go to the Africa Bureau and different bureaus across the State Department will use me as a resource, as a special advisor. Sometimes I'll, you know, because of my knowledge of Africa, you know, I'll get invited to meetings or whatever and sort of weigh in or go out to post. Maybe I continue to do my own research outside of my work. Mm-hmm. And I like to keep that part a little bit separate, you know?
And was there more that you wanted to say about the work you do on a day-to-day basis? It sounds like you have a lot of freedom.
I do. So, you know, again, nobody oversees what I do. I'm considered the Africa expert here. I am the sole Africa expert here.
Wow.
So I put together a curriculum that I want to put together. And so I feel like in many ways I get to influence policy. I get to influence policymakers. Mm-hmm. I, at a critical time, I don't fill my class with government speakers. I don't fill my class with former Foreign Service officers or former ambassadors. I challenge whatever they think they know. So, for example, a couple of people in the next class going to Mauritius, and I invite a former DC student who actually, David Vine, he's a friend.
Right.
You and he did some work on Chagos Islands, and this is basically the space where a population was resettled for American base. If you're introduced to another perspective, I just think that the way they engage with Africans, with African governments, the way they think about U.S. foreign policy will be different. You know, this allows me to both be an academic, continue to do the kind of work that I want to do, and make an impact.
Now, I was wondering if you could talk a little more. You said you sort of fell into this work. So could you say more about the connections or how that process of getting to where you are now from academia, how that worked out?
Yeah, I would say, so I always let my own personal research interest guide what I do. And so, you know, my own, it didn't matter if I was in a country for, you know, I don't know, some conference or whatever I was in a country for, I would make it a point of meeting with activists, of understanding, you know, what is it that their grievances are, of understanding, you know, meeting with the media, and, you know, these countries don't have free media. I just became known for that kind of work. But I mean, you sort of keep going and you keep going and you keep going. And eventually, you know, I guess the Human Rights Bureau became aware of the kind of work I was doing. I mean, I was meeting with activists that nobody else was meeting with. I was going to countries that people weren't usually going to, you know, American diplomats weren't going to because I was a researcher. And so that's how I kind of came into my current role. And so I think you just do what you do. I mean, this is advice that I give to anybody. You do what you do. You do it well. People feel your passion. Mm. And they will probably come to talk to you and say, that's somebody I should be talking to.
Yeah. So in this case, you had a set of passions and interests and concerns, and you let those drive you in the role that you were in, being able to do this kind of research.
MTV has a program, Rebel Music, right? Yeah. Where they look at activists, right? I was a producer on the Senegalese episode. And the reason why is to translate this work. How do you translate this important stuff that these people are doing on the ground to an American public? Hmm. And MTV is targeting 16 to 21 year olds. And I thought, this is a way. I mean, that episode is essentially the book that I'm writing right now. I mean, it is just a visual representation. And so for me, I think that right now it happens to be this. Maybe next year it'll be some other way. But I know I have a clear vision of what I want to do. I mean, I think of myself as slightly an interrupter, right? And so I think that if I'm just doing whatever I'm doing with passion, then the jobs come to me.
One thing is, I'm curious to what degree your anthropological training has come in to be a benefit to you in this kind of research work. And just to be clear for the listeners, that you did get a PhD in anthropology. So was that useful?
100% useful. So two things I'm going to say. The first, I got a PhD in anthropology, regular trained academic scholar, theoretical debate, you know, all of it, ethnography. So I'm still very much ever the scholar. I think it was essential because I think that when we have a problem to answer, we end up going back to our disciplines. For me, it's going to the people, what is happening on the ground. Mm. For political scientists, they look at the institutions, and so I often engage in, you know, with political scientists. Mm. I believe in civic education. I believe in engaging populations. I believe that an engaged population will then hold their governments accountable. And so for me, my anthropological training has forced me to always think about the people, put the people first, and talk to the people, right? So for me, I think that's what's important. It also gave me a certain amount of credibility outside of just a PhD. I mean, you know, everybody in this town has a master's. It's a very educated town. I'm in Washington, D.C. But it gives you a certain amount of credibility. My on-the-ground experience in Africa, you know, years and years and years, gives you a certain level of credibility. And so that's good. But I think, again, for the listeners, what's important is you got to get outside the debates, because when you're trying to get a job outside of academia, nobody wants to see your 10-page CV. Nobody wants to see that. Nobody wants to see all the talks you gave. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry to tell people, but they don't care, right? What I want to know is what skills you have, how can you now transfer this to spaces outside, right? And oftentimes, it's, you know, they still want us to be academics, right? But it's through writing, right? So that's how we get our credibility. And writing outside of your average academic journal is important. Not using disciplinary jargon is important.
Yeah.
I think writing op-eds, important, you know, brief, short, you know, here's this problem, here's a solution. That's it, right? Like, I think that there's a gap right now between government and academia that just really can be filled, but I just don't think academics know how to take advantage of that space.
Yeah.
You know, we are experts and we have a certain level of knowledge. And so I think that we could probably do it better, but we could start with our CVs.
And one thing I wanted to follow up, you said that you had a niche, really, through your training, your degree, your credential. But on the other hand, I'm wondering if it was hard and if you found resistance from the people you're working with in terms of the methods that you wanted to use.
When I'm sort of in a space, I only come at it from mostly a development and governance space. When I'm in a space and I'm saying, okay, some level of policing is necessary, I get it. But you know what? You have to give people some, you know, access to services. You've got to give them governance. You've got to give them running water. You've got to, you know, they need roads and they need sanitation and they need, you know, flush toilets and, you know, I mean, it's not really popular because Boko Haram is like kidnapping girls and it's all over the news, but I think it is necessary. It is unpopular. So I think there's continually a tension. I think that academia probably, and particularly coming out of the GC, which has a very particular bent that I obviously appreciate. Gramsci is like the best. I think academia in some ways says, you really shouldn't be working in that space. But then that space says, you're not really one of us. And so then you find yourself sort of at the crossroads or maybe fitting nowhere. I still think you have to just stick to your guns and you have to say, this is my position. And you're going to keep saying it. And somebody's going to listen someday, but I'm just going to keep saying it, you know, in different ways until you like it, you know, but I'm not going to say it with jargon and I'm not going to speak to fellow academics and call out the government and say how horrible they are. I'm going to speak to the people making policy.
So I was curious to drill down into just what's a typical day like for you at the office?
I would say typical day just as classes are coming up is, so these are 2-week long classes. I don't have to teach them all. Like I said, you know, I got some, you know, former GC student coming in. I've got some government people coming in. I've got academics from all over, human rights, you know, activists Skyping in from the region. I've got all kinds of things going on. So it can be anything from spending way too many hours on email, reaching out to people or responding to people. That's not the fun part of my job. I don't like admin. But if the class is not on, it can be going to lectures around town, going to meetings at the bureau. It can be coming in and like Right now I'm reading American Policy in Southern Africa. You know, this is like a history book. You know, it's like from, you know, during the Cold War. It can just be reading. It can be writing an article, working on my book. I just got back from spending 3.5 weeks across the continent because I've spent a lot of time on the ground, mm-hmm. but not as a government employee. So I have to go spend some time in an embassy to understand what that's like. So I would say some days a lot more like that of an academic. Today I spent time working on my syllabus, putting together my meeting list. But other days, it's probably a lot more like a government worker. So I'll go to like some all-hands meeting with senior Africa, you know, people in the bureau, and then meet some other people to talk about who knows what, you know, some sort of Africa policy stuff. And then maybe go catch a lecture and then, you know, come back and think a little bit.
That sounds great.
We've got a thinking time if you're a scholar. And then of course, the lovely responding to emails. That's like every day. Yeah.
And what's the best part of that, the most satisfying aspect of the work you do that you just described?
Some days, I think it is in the classroom. Some days it's when I do bring someone in and I feel the tension. Like some days I'm in the classroom and I feel the tension with the students. So it's not like an undergrad tension. These people are making decisions, right? Like they're making decisions. So I can feel like, damn, I've always done it this way. And this person's kind of interrupting that a little bit, right? Like I bring this woman in, and this is, you know, I keep talking about Boko Haram, but I bring this young woman in who's been to the region and interviewed people and all that. And she's, you know, she's no joke. She's like saying governments, you know, not the U.S. government, but some of these governments who are claiming to fight, you know, terrorists are like committing, you know, human rights atrocities or, you know, whatever, you know. And so now they get to hear from a different perspective. So for me, that is satisfying. I mean, I see almost like the undergraduate perspective. I see like the light bulb go off. And so that's nice. Other days, it might actually be sitting in the room with a lot of very senior makers and them saying, hey, we kind of want this person in the room, right? I guess sometimes I speak, sometimes I don't, right? But the point is that, you know, being in that space and seeing it up close and feeling like my perspective is, it's okay to have this perspective. It's okay to sort of be a little bit outside of your comfort zone. It's okay to stick to your beliefs. And so some days it can just be the fact that I'm in a certain room. Like, you know, I'm able to be part of this conversation.
And make an impact that's quite big, really, in terms of these influencers and policymakers.
Someday.
Some of them.
Someday, I'll hopefully know that I've done that. I'm still in the process.
Could you talk about what specific skills and knowledge you might have gained in grad school that helped you prepare for your current work?
I'm a solid researcher. In this town, they like to use the word analyst. I know that DC prepared me. I'm a solid scholar. I can read anything, synthesize it, you know, pull out the important parts. I can pull different pieces of things together, different bodies of knowledge together, and sort of come up with something. I still think very much like a scholar. I know that my view is just one view. I know that it's important to look at something historically. I know that political economy is important. I know that talking to people is important, not just people on the ground, but you need to speak to government, opposition. You know, I mean, I think you need to just sort of see things from multiple sides. I really got that from my training, from my dissertation committee that really, you know, pushed me. And I don't feel like I am second class when it comes to my intellect in any space. I know that the GC prepared me well.
So are there professional skills that you would recommend current GC students who are interested in a government job or perhaps something you described that they might hone in looking forward
to? If you thought about just a regular kind of government job, let's say in a human rights bureau or in a regional bureau or whatever, any other functional bureau for that matter, I would say knowing how to write is important. Knowing how to communicate your thoughts in a non-scholarly way, I think, is essential. I think if people know that this is what they want to do, look, I think it's absolutely important to keep your academic street cred because I really do care about what my academic colleagues think. But the fact is that on the way out the door, they should probably have a couple of maybe 1 or 2 page articles, you know, that have been in non-academic publications. You know, everybody wants to blog. Forget about your own blog. Go put a piece on somebody's famous blog, you know, not your blog. Nobody knows your blog. Like, go to the famous blog. So for me, it's sort of writing. You know, there's a way that people like to sort of think of branding themselves. Like, I don't really care about that kind of stuff. I think, you know, even in this town, everybody kind of wants to push for that. I just believe that if you work really, really hard, that translates. You've got to be able to communicate the broader importance and impact of your work. So that, you know, I have this sort of really myopic study. I mean, I'm going to tell you that as much as the dissertation is important to your life right now, that's just a moment in your life. And so I think that you've got to be able to say at an interview, my dissertation was on this, or my study was on this. Here's why it matters in the world. Here's why it matters in policy spaces. Here's how it can be translated. I would say anybody who wants to get into government, they should start looking at any sort of research institutes and think tanks and looking at the things that they put out so that you can think about writing in that way also. I don't mean to say you don't have... You can't be creative and have your own style. The jargon, nobody wants to hear it. I'm sorry. I'm just so sorry. But nobody, not if you want to get outside of academia, you know. Say things like research. You would say things like, I know how to analyze things. You would say things like, I can engage, you know, whatever, run focus groups, engage different communities. I mean, we do all this amazing stuff, you know, as we're doing our ethnographic research, right? Intercultural or cross-cultural skills. I mean, all of these kinds of things are really important. I always say things like, I mean, if you serve on committees, that means you know how to sort of team building and all this, you know, other kind of things. And just thinking about all of the work we do that is also outside of our own, like even what you're doing now, you know, this thing that you're doing now, I mean, all of these things can go on a CV, on a resume, you know, and you can just boil it down rather than the study, boil it down to the skill, to those kinds of, you know, bullet points, right?
Anything you miss about academia?
No, I do. I actually, so even though I engage with academics, I'm teaching a class in a couple of weeks and then I don't teach again until February. And I thought, no, man, I'm going to take that time to go to a lot of the universities and their academic talks. Even if you totally disagree with a scholar, that disagreement gets you sort of going and you sort of think about things, and I kind of want to do that again. Yeah, I was in Namibia not so long ago and they mentioned Gramsci. I was like, yes! I think just being able to just be in that space and talking about an issue just for the sake of like talking about it, and I kind of miss that. Your sort of intellectual juices get going. You think of like, I mean, you have a separate notebook for all your future studies. When you're working, it's not exactly the same way.
Right, that makes sense.
That about does it for my interview with Jeanette Yarwood. Thanks for listening in on this episode of the CUNY Graduate Center's Alumni Aloud podcast. We'll see you here next time for another interview. Subscribe or touch the download tab on your iTunes app to get the latest.